We start with the four C's of conscious communication. So those are compassion. So viewing your partner through a lens of compassion and viewing yourself through a lens of compassion, assuming the best of them, assuming that they have the best of intentions for their child and for their interactions and for your family, and assuming that they're knowing that they're human, that they're imperfect human beings who just like us make mistakes and just like us are worthy of dignity and respect.
You would like to join the conversation and ask your own questions, sign up to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/MrChaz. You get access to these weekly sessions, and you can also get access to one-on-one coaching with me. If you just want one-on-one coaching without the resources, without the weekly sessions, just message me through Instagram or TikTok, and we'll set something up.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to people who can help you on your parenting journey. Today, I have Dr. Laura Froyen on the episode with this session with my community live in the flesh. And we're going to have a very great conversation today. I've been saying that this conversation is probably going to be a little bit deeper than some of the other conversations that you may have heard on this podcast. Although I do have a, t we do have a tendency to go deep. That is totally my intention with this conversation about reparenting. But we're going to start off, and I'm going to let Laura actually introduce herself. Go ahead, Laura.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm Dr. Laura Froyen. I have my PhD in human development and family studies and a specialization in couple and family therapy, which is just a big way of saying that I like thinking about kids and families as embedded in the systems that they're in. And we can't take the kids out of the parents. We can't take the man or the woman out of the parent. We can't take the couple relationship if you're parenting with someone out of there. That we're all in these contexts and they're all working together. And so I like supporting the whole child and the whole parent in this journey that we're on as we grow up together alongside our children.
Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead. First question. What is reparenting? It's a phrase that is, used a lot, especially on social media. Break it down. General question. What is reparenting?
So I think reparenting is a phrase that can seem like really like dark and heavy and like big. But really what it is it's offering ourselves in the moment, the care and kindness and compassion and grace and respectful parenting that we needed when we were kids, the parenting that we didn't get. Regardless of our parents' intentions, we all probably know that our parents were doing the best that they could with what they knew then. Parents make mistakes, just like I do, just like all of the parents you have here with you tonight. We all make mistakes, and so did our parents. And so reparenting is an opportunity to offer ourselves just the grace and compassion and the respect that many of us didn't get right now in the moment. And the beautiful thing about our unconscious mind is that the little children inside us, they don't know that it's not happening in the past. All they know is that they're in pain right now and they've got a grown up, us, who's holding them gently and hearing them and validating their emotions and being kind to them. And that feels good. And that's a really lovely way to heal old wounds really quickly in the moment without having to rehash a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and it's a process that really anyone can go through, and it's really just the improvement process. Even if you feel like your, the parenting that you were raised with was, even if you feel like it was perfect, even though I always say that there is no such thing as perfect, and you shouldn't even try to be perfect. Instead of trying to be a perfectionist, try to be an improvementist. The goal isn't to be perfect every day. The goal is to improve a little every day. But even just beyond just the everyday, right? Generations and generations to improve upon our knowledge, upon our skills. And I think a very well, parents, you know, generations and generations ago, they were going through something completely different and went through traumas that were very different and that very much informed their parenting, which then impacted who, you know, those children became, which then impacted like the way that they parented those children who grew up, impacted the way that, you know, they start to parent, which may be our grandparents, and then so on and so on. And that cycle continues. And, you know, it's, I like to make the, you know, just like the analogy of, it's almost kind of like phones or iPhones. Even if, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago or generations ago, I think it's good because generations, because different generations of phones, right? Generations ago, that the first iPhone was like the best thing. Like it was perfect, right? It felt perfect because it was better than, you know, the previous, than the flip phone or the
razor,
right? The razor, the pager, right? It was better. So it felt perfect. But there's always an opportunity to build off of what the previous generation. And that's what I look at it. I think that for generations and generations, that they're going to be things that we are still going to continue to grow. I don't think that after this generation, I don't think that like we have all the answers right now. Everyone's doing as close to as perfect as possible. And the next generation won't have to improve at all. No, I think this is something, this is a human process we're going through of continuous improvement. And, you know, when we say we want the best for our children, isn't that, or we want them to have things that we didn't have. A lot of times we think about, you know, monetarily, you know, financially, like we want them to have the job opportunities. We want them to have, you know, the money, the house, to be able to afford the toys, the car. But, you know, what if giving them things that we didn't have? What if when we said that, we really meant the, you know, emotional regulation tools, right? Or the emotional health that our parents and that maybe we didn't have growing up. The ability to not have so much anxiety when we're going to our boss and asking for a raise or having a, you know, tough conversation with a spouse. Because those things have been, you know, embedded into who we are, and it's been a part of the culture, you know, for our entire lives. So it's not as challenging or not as difficult. What do you think? Well, first, what are your thoughts on that? Because I just said a lot.
Yeah. What you were saying was reminding me of a quote that I feel like probably lots of us have seen. And I don't even know that it's attributed to anybody. It's so in the parenting zeitgeist. Be the parent you needed as a child. And I always like to change that just a little bit, because you need to be the parent you needed as a child to your inner child, and then be the parent to your actual child that they need. Mm-hmm. So it's so easy to project upon our kids what we needed and what we wanted. You know, Christmas is coming up. Lots of folks are buying gifts for their kids, and they are thinking in their minds, I would have been so grateful to have had this as a gift. You know, like for example, I always wanted an easy bake oven, never got one. You know, they probably never worked, but I never got one. But I have thought several times about buying one for my kids just because I never got one, but they don't want it. They would never use it. That's not them. And so like, this is, it's so important to us that like the reparenting topic, that we get to be the parent that we wanted right now in the present moment with ourselves. And then that frees us up to be the parent that our kids actually need us to be for them. It's two separate things, you know, but it's tempting we want to almost heal through our kids. And instead I like us to think about our kids are inviting us to heal. They're showing us where the healing needs to happen, but they don't need the healing. We do. We're the ones that need the healing. You know, they're going to do their own healing when they grow up. You know, when they get older, they'll have their own stuff to work on, and it'll be their stuff and their story.
You know, how do you, this makes me think of another question that I didn't prep you for, but you know, how do you decide the parent that you want to be, and how do you decide or know what parent that your child needs?
Yeah. Okay. So those are two different things, right? So, I mean, the first like deciding for yourself, I really recommend that parents sit down with themselves. If they're parenting with a partner, or maybe they're raising their family in a multi-generational home, we sit down together and think about, what do we want for this child? What are our goals for this child as they grow? What are our goals for our relationship with our child as they grow? What is the outcome? What is the long game vision that we have for this kid? And as kids age, they will have an input into that long game vision, right? They need to, they have to. And so parenting from a place of intention, of goals, of kind of long-term vision, but then also really being attuned to the kid in front of you, really getting in touch with who they are so that we aren't approaching them. There's an analogy of being a carpenter versus being a gardener with your kids. And it's tempting to want to be a carpenter, where we get this kind of blank piece of wood that we get to turn into whatever we want, the things that we didn't have the chance to be, you know, because we didn't have the same opportunities. And it's pretty hard sometimes to force some types of wood into some types of shapes, you know, and people can get hurt when we do that. So instead, like, rather than being a carpenter, being a gardener is a lovely thing to be. Tend the soil, make sure they have the nutrients and the environment that they need, and allow them to blossom as they grow. And we don't get mad at plants that grow a little differently than we expected, right? We often accept plants just as they are, as they come up out of the ground. Like, that's a funky bean. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we're quite a lot more accepting of plants versus, you know, when a piece of wood that we're working with doesn't turn out like we were expecting it, we get mad at it. We maybe try to force it. We maybe toss it out and reject it.
Blame ourselves,
hard on ourselves. There's a lot of rough stuff that happens when we try to carpenter our kids.
Yeah. No, that is a great analogy. I do like that analogy as well. And then it also, there's so much less pressure with gardening too. It's just, you know, it's learning about gardening, right? And then knowing like what that plant needs, what that carrot needs, as opposed to what this watermelon needs, as opposed to what this pumpkin needs, and then creating the environment for it to thrive and for it to grow. And you're not even fully, it's not even all you, right? And
yeah,
why I think the metaphor works so well. Like, it's, yeah, you're watering it. Maybe you planted the seed in the environment where it's going to grow, and that has a huge impact on whether it's going to, how it's going to grow. But, you know, there's also the sun and time and out of your control that, you know, we, you know, just have to kind of like, we can't control everything, as tempting as it is. You know, maybe we can position it a little bit like, so it does get some sun, but we can't give it the sun, right?
Exactly. And we for the most part, if we notice a mistake when we're gardening, we're like, wow, we didn't know that. It's looking a little droopy. Let's see what we need to do to fix it, you know, to shift what we're doing. We don't get too hard on ourselves, you know.
So Natalie asked a question. It's a good question. She said, what if the goals are vastly different? You know, because you talked about, you know, kind of aligning the goals between your spouse and the household. And I find that when I talk to people, when I talk to parents, I talk to parents, teachers, that our goals tend to be pretty similar when we really have the conversation. The words that we use may be very different, but it's, we all want the child to grow up to be, you know, compassionate, caring, to be quote unquote good people, right?
Yeah.
Compassionate, caring.
Successful is a big one that people generally, everybody says they want their kid to be successful, but have very different definitions of what that means.
Right. Successful and happy are two ones that I hear often.
Yeah. And I think too, that sometimes parents think that Natalie, I not to say that this is happening for you, but I work with a lot of couples who are trying to get aligned in their parenting. And a lot of couples think that they don't, that they have opposite goals, that they have different ideas of what is, you know, of what they want for their kids. But in reality, they seem to have, most of the time, in my experience, parents are pretty aligned in what their long-term goals are for their kids, and are just have different ways of going about meeting those goals. They have kind of a different set of parenting behaviors that they see as supporting those goals. So for example, if both parents want a kid to be successful when they grow up, one parent might be thinking that means like financial success, which means that they need academic success because they need to be able to get in a good college, which means that they might be quite hard on a child when they're not making their grades or doing their homework. And whereas another person who says they want their kid to be happy and successful, that might mean success in family, find a partner that they love and raise kids that love them and that they love and that they're happy in that way. And that looks way different in action, right? So getting clear on what our goals are and then how are the actions that we're doing as a parent supporting those goals. And oftentimes it's the actions that are quite different.
Yeah.
Even the overarching goals are aligned.
Okay. And so then how do we, so let's say that we do, all right, okay. It seemed like they were different goals, but they are more similar than what we realized. But I still believe that, you know, maybe my way of helping our child be successful is through, like a parent said, maybe through punishment, like what their grandparents are thinking, punishment, shame, and another parent may have a different philosophy, more just the discipline and the teaching and connection. You know, so how do you align maybe you have the whys are aligned, but how do you align the hows, and should you like, how do you go about that?
Yeah. So one thing that I just want folks to know is that the workbook that I use with my private clients, with my private couples, is available for free. So if you go to laurafroyan.com/partners, you can get the workbook that I use that helps with this exact question. It really, the focus is getting aligned in your vision for your family. And even aligned in some of the big picture practices that we're doing. But at the end of the day, we're different people. We have different backgrounds. We have different histories. We have different things that make us tick. And we have different styles. And it's okay for there to be some differences. And every couple has to figure out for themselves where the line is, where the tipping point is, because we want our if we're partnered with someone and we're parenting with them, we want our kids to have a good relationship with them. We don't want to undermine them. And that's their relationship. So there's a point where, like, in service of the relationship, we kind of have to stay out of it. And then we all have our boundaries, our lines. So in our house, we have decided as a family that we are not going to be using any spanking or any harsh punishments. And that we're not going to do hands-on. And so if things are getting heated, it's at that point where things are getting heated, then that's where we both have permission, mutual permission, to step in and hold that boundary firm, you know, and keep that mutually agreed upon kind of hard line in place there. If you're not able to have a mutually agreed upon hard line, it's also okay for you to communicate your boundary to them. And this is why it's critical that couples have good communication skills, that whether or not you agree in every parenting action, you have to be able to talk about it, because there's always going to be another disagreement. There's always going to be conflict. Research shows that even the most successful couples with the longest, happiest marriages consistently fight over 3 or 4 main topics. It's the way they fight that makes the difference, that makes for a long-lasting, happy and satisfactory and good relationship. So it's very key to learn how to fight fair, how to communicate consciously. So that regardless of whether you're actually aligned in the day-to-day actions of parenting, that you always can turn to each other. You can always turn into each other. You know, you're a team, that you rely on each other. And no matter what, you can work these things out.
Yeah. And so what is that conscious communication, you know, like and sound like?
Well, so this is what I teach in my course, Partners in Parenting. But we start with the 4 C's of conscious communication. So those are compassion. So viewing your partner through a lens of compassion and viewing yourself through a lens of compassion. assuming the best of them, assuming that they have the best of intentions for their child and for their interactions and for your family, and assuming that they're knowing that they're human, that they're imperfect human beings who just like us make mistakes and just like us are worthy of dignity and respect. The second C is curiosity. So it is very easy to go into a situation with all of our preconceived notions, all the things that our history have taught us, these words mean, all of this stuff just layered onto it. So I highly recommend kind of shifting those lenses away and viewing your partner with just unobstructed, non-judgmental curiosity.
Before you go on to number three, what's the phrase that you could, let's say that something's being said or you feel like a boundary's being crossed or you're observing something that you feel something and you want to consciously communicate with curiosity. And maybe that's not, curiosity isn't the feeling in your heart at the moment, but you want the words to come out that way and to, you know, not trigger and for it to be, what are some phrases to say to spark that conversation?
Absolutely. So first, if you've tapped into compassion, you'll be able to genuinely say, it seems like you're having a really hard time right now. It seems like you're triggered. Can I help you? You know, can I offer you a break? You know, can we tag out? And this is also something that's really helpful to set up ahead of time. Like many of my couples have a code word for tagging in and tagging out for like when they're getting heightened, especially if they've got an intense situation where that they're parenting through. Like I've got a really strong-willed kid who can get really, really intense in her reactions. And sometimes we need to tag out and tag back in. Something silly is like, one of my couples is cupcakes, the other one is bananas, but something silly that can kind of gets your attention and says like, oh, okay, I need to tag out. So a good tag out is nice, but just a like, hey, what's up? You seem stressed. What's going on for you right now? I see you and I love you and you're struggling and I want to help. Just even just the like, hey, you okay? But with not the, are you okay? Because you're not right now. You know, like, I mean, the attitude, there's a difference. And of course, when we come out with an attack, so this is another piece of it, that curiosity, the four C's allow you to have a soft startup. So the other two C's are connection as your primary goal, understanding that every conflict you have with your child, with your parents, with your partner, with your friend, with your boss, every conflict is an opportunity for connection. And really seeing it that way, that like, okay, we're having this conflict right now and I'm going to get to understand my partner better and they're going to understand me. And then collaboration is the fourth C, where you're going into it with a goal of we're going to work together to figure this out because we're a team. And those four C's allow you to soft start. And research shows that, so couples who come in and fight in a laboratory environment where people are coding their interactions, you can predict how a conflict is going to go within the first 10 seconds, whether it's going to be a good conflict. And they can actually even predict divorce rates based on the first 10 seconds on how a couple starts a disagreement. So soft startup is key. And that's just what I was, hey, I love you. It seems like you're having a really hard time. Can I give you a break? You know, or can I help with this? Or even just like letting it play out and be like, whew, after they're in bed, that was a hard day. I know I got triggered. What about you? And processing it later.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, all the things you're saying, the four C's are tools of communication, not just communication to use with children as well.
Yep.
And these, what we're talking about, are really just communication, relationship skills, regardless of the relationship, too. And this 100%. Also, and I always like to just add it in also, too, think about this in the workplace, too. When you do have something that you want to say and you do want to speak up, how you speak up definitely matters. The tone, that the soft start definitely matters, as opposed to like, you know, barging in the door and say, hey, it's not going to be a productive conversation, right? And that's the same thing with even, you know, with children, that's the same thing with your spouse. That's just relationships. And it's just people. And a lot of times we don't even really, I love, you know, that it's conscious communication, because we don't even realize a lot of times that our tone sounds like that, right? That it's just how I'm saying it. And it's just how I'm used to saying it. And we don't necessarily realize that the impact that it has on the other person. But then we continue with the conversation and we end up not really hearing each other. And it's just two people saying, you know, almost vaguely related statements to each other, but not really listening and having a conversation.
Right, because we're both kind of in our heads and we've both gone down different paths where we're telling each other ourselves stories about the other person or about ourselves. And yeah, you know, and I mean, and curiosity is really powerful. I know you and I talked about this before on my podcast when you were my guest, but that, like, even the other day I said something to my husband that in my head was a compliment, and I saw his face and I was like, whoa. What I just said clearly did not land on him the way that I intended it. And so the curiosity piece was just like, hey, I want to check in with you. I just said something and I meant it this way, but the way your face read it, it seemed like maybe you took it another way. And I want to just make sure that we're clear. You know, I just want to make sure, because I think I hurt your feelings and I didn't mean to, and I don't want to, you know, and that, like, that's just it. The being willing to get curious without getting defensive or saying like, you're so sensitive, that shouldn't have hurt your feelings, I didn't mean it that way, get over it, you know, like, we just, I don't know.
And this goes into my next question that I didn't prep before. How do we keep, or how do we teach children conscious communication skills?
Yeah, we do it by modeling, right? So if we think about the patterns we use with our partners, and the patterns we use with our kids, those are the patterns we saw growing up. Those are when we're little, we have these brains that are learning how communication works, right? And our parents upload that information. They upload, you know, the programming that's hardwired into us. And so when we go out and find a partner, we actually look for partners who are most likely to allow those same patterns to play out in our lives. And we're gifted with children who also invite those patterns. And that's a beautiful thing, because that allows us to take a look at those patterns when we see them playing out, or we hear our mother's voice come out of our mouth and we're like, whoa, you know, that wasn't okay. That gives us a chance to, like, re-examine and say, like, wow, that's a habit. That's my habit brain. And I don't want to talk that way anymore to my partner, to my kid, or to myself. I think, you know, we're talking about all of this as, like, existing externally with other people, but we also have a really important internal relationship with ourselves. And we can use the four C's with ourselves as well. As we're super hard on ourselves. I know, yeah. At least I am.
I'm actually going to shift gears a little bit. Well, it kind of had to do with something that you just mentioned. And it's actually to what someone asked before we got on here. What if it's grandparents, right, who are in the conversation, who are a part of the household, and they firmly believe that, you know, they're, you know, nothing should change, that everything, there's no more learning to be done. And now it's two generations in a household, and maybe you and your spouse are on the same page, but, you know, grandparents aren't. You know, how is that, you know, how do you, so I know conscious communication is the answer, but does it change with grandparents, and what is, and not even just what to do, how should we think about, it, the interaction?
Well, I think the first thing that it's so important to understand is that we talk a lot about how parents have a hard time right now, like it's a hard time to be a parent. There's so much information available to us and so much comparison that's available to us too. Here's these people on social media who are doing it this way and I'm not, I must be failing, right? So there's a lot that's hard about being a modern parent, but there's also quite a lot that's hard about being a modern grandparent. The world has kind of surpassed them. There's all this new information that they haven't caught up on yet. And all of the information is telling them that they were wrong, that they screwed up. And Chaz left. So I hope this is still working. You know, they're hurting when they see us. They can't be anything other than defensive for the most part, because that's part of their identity too. Just like we're wrapped up in our identity as parents, like who we are as parents is a big part of us. So too was it that way for them. And then when they get this message that they were wrong, that we're doing everything differently, and it's almost as if we're kind of like parenting at them, we're like parenting respectfully at them, you know, how can they not be defensive? How can they not take it personally? And I mean, and like, we can say all we want, like, Mom, I love you. I'm so glad you're my mom. And we're doing it differently. And they're still allowed to not like it. They're still allowed to struggle with that a little bit, because that's their identity too. This is something that I talk about with my mom a lot. You know, I'm in the public eye with my parenting, and I talk about her parenting of me too. She actually just text messaged me just a minute ago, because we're all in a bubble together. My sister lives in town, and so do my parents, and my kids and my sister's kids were playing with, like having a snowball fight earlier today. And one of the big kids threw a snowball and hit my little one in her face. It was a complete accident, but both kids were crying. Both kids were having big feelings about it. My nephew was upset. He didn't like the fact that he had hurt someone. He was defensive, like anybody would be, when, because you know, my 5-year-old is not shy about saying, like, you can't hit me with a snowball. That wasn't okay. You know, like just crying. And so my sister and I were both like, validating both of their feelings and my mom just left. Didn't say goodbye. She just couldn't handle it. And so she's text messaging right now, telling me how much she admires how my sister and I can handle those big emotions. But she's willing to step into the arena, as Brené Brown would say, with me. She's willing to say, like, yeah, I didn't do it all right. You guys are doing it better. This is better. This is a better way, and it's new, and I'm learning, but I'm here with you. But not everybody is able to do that. Most of us aren't able to do that half the time. You know, when we feel judged and criticized a lot. And I'm sure that I feel a lot for grandparents. A lot. So actually, in my Partners in Parenting course, I have several mom and daughter parenting teams who are taking it together. It's the same skills. It's the same conscious communication skills. I don't know. And knowing full well, even in multi-generational homes, you're the parent and your parenting has the most impact on your child.
Yeah.
You know, and one last thing, if we are supporting our children in learning these skills, then they set the boundaries. And we can get out of it. They have this one-to-one relationship with our parents that they're in charge of. So the other day, my mom came over and gave my 5-year-old a hug, who is very good with her boundaries. And she said, Grandma, I love hugging you, but I didn't like how you tickled my belly at the end. Please don't do that again. And she was like, oh,
love it.
Okay, I won't. You know, but yeah, right. And so like, if we are advocating for our kids and teaching them these skills of how to set compassionate boundaries around our bodies, around the way that they like to be treated, then they'll do that work for us eventually, which is really nice.
Yeah, that is, I loved your perspective on it. And it's definitely a great way to see it and really empathize with the grandparents of just, you know, that this is something new that they're going through too. Like, you know, they're learning just like we're learning. With the added part that it feels probably too late for them, right? Too late, because, you know, their children have grown up and now they're raising their own children. And so, you know, that does add a whole nother layer of, you know, insecurity, which can be hard to be, would make it hard to be open to new information and be receptive and to try it out. And so the fact that any grandparent is stepping into that arena and open to open to new information is something to celebrate.
It's a work in progress. I see Christina says she's envious. I get that. I know you think I was such a terrible parent. That has absolutely been said mm-hmm. in my house. I don't want to give this impression that it's perfect, but it's consistently returning to this like idea that, mom, I love you. I'm so grateful. You were my mom. I had exactly the mom I needed to be. And now all I'm doing is being the mom I need to be to my kids, just like you were to me. I'm so grateful you were my mom. You know, and I'm just doing the best I can, just like I know you were doing the best you could. A little bit of, you know, just a little bit of kind of throwing them a little bit of a bone, a little bit of compassion can go a long way in those, soothing those feelings.
Yeah.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?